Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Manchester City and Real Madrid are set for a rematch in the Champions League semi-finals. What now for a hapless Chelsea and Frank Lampard after they failed comeback at home? Man United crash out of Europe while West Ham push on in the Conference League. And what to make of Liverpool's thrashing of Leeds United at Elland Road. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
Yes, Mr. Musto, but before we get into some action and there were some real stories this week, we want to remind everybody the Premier League is heading to the US this summer for the first ever pre-season tournament. Aston Villa, Brentford, Brighton, Chelsea, Fulham and Newcastle will play in Atlanta, in New York, in Orlando, in Philadelphia, in close to Washington, D.C., so for more information, head over to www.premierleague.com/summer-series and you'll get all the information there about the teams, about tickets, about venues, and might even get a note on some of the people like Mr. Musto and myself who hopefully will be there presenting the game. So something to look forward to this summer if you're a Premier League fan. Make sure you get to one of those stadiums and get to the game's real feast of football happening in the summer. A feast of football was happening this midweek, my friend. Let's start at, I think, the big high-profile game of the midweek. Manchester City were going to Bayern Munich 3-0 up from the first leg. I think everybody felt as much as City look in control. Maybe an early goal for Bayern in front of that crowd could possibly sway things a little bit. Wasn't how it went, Rob. In the end, a 4-1 aggregate seems pretty comfortable. Over the two legs, you'd probably end up saying it was reasonably comfortable. All the good work was done in the first leg. What was your takeaway from City, the second leg, and where they are, where they stand, how they look now in the competition, Rob?
Well, yeah, I think we'll get on to that about how they stand and how they look in the competition. I think very favourably. But it was good, another good game, wasn't it? I mean, whenever Bayern Munich plays, you know, whenever you get these two going up with the managers and the players and stuff, brilliant game of football, super interesting. Bayern Munich, as you'd expect, Rob, hot out of the traps, very quick, got the crowd involved early, put Man City under a lot of pressure, a lot of bodies forward, a couple of saves had to be made early on. I thought City struggled with the pace of those wide players. Coman and Leroy Sané at times looked like, particularly when City got that high line going and they got in a couple of times in behind. Leroy Sané had a big chance, Rob, didn't he? I think around about a quarter of an hour. 17 minutes in. That's one of those moments, defining moments of the game. Stuff couldn't score it there. But, you know, and we can go into the details, Rob, but, you know, I'm going to go straight to the headline for me is that City are different. You know, I've hinted this quite a few times now in the Champions League podcast. They're a better balanced team, Rob. They're a better balanced team. This was a really good example. If you want to see why I feel City are now more positioned than ever before to win this competition, this second leg away at Bayern shows you with the toughness that they had to show you, the team spirit, the fact they get behind the ball, the fact that there's pretty much five centre-backs playing, if you include Rodri. Talked about this before. You know, it's a very set system. He's got a very set team. I can't imagine, famous last words, that Pep would want to tweak too much about this. He really has to find a little formula with John Stones moving into midfield, which happened less in this game because Bayern Munich had good possession of the ball. But just that Akanji, you know, just an addition of Akanji, of Ake starting the game. They can bring in Laporte late on with Stones, with Diaz, with Rodri, and particularly Rodri, Rob. I mean, how good he is and what an amazing job he does for the team. But, I think they're tougher. I think they're tougher, more physical, better balanced for this competition. So that's why I'm particularly positive and very high on what they might do this year in this competition.
Yeah, hard not to agree with that, mate. It was really interesting, actually. As you sit down, watch a game, you get a note, you get a cup of tea, you're ready to go. And I think it was really probably not anything that Bayern Munich had in their own control. But, you know, for the first 3 minutes, the referee had some technical issues. And the crowd were building, mate. And it was like the crowd Bayern was singing. There was brilliant scenes behind the goals. And I'm thinking, if Thomas Tuchel could have composed this, this is exactly as it was. You know, it was. I thought the first 10 or 15 minutes, Rob, were a bit different. I thought they were aggressive. Mm. I thought there was a physicality. I thought, you know, it was a bit of a mess between the two. I mean, Gundogan and Kimmich had a little, you know, go at each other at one point. I thought there was a bit of an edge to it, which made the game even better. You're right. I think from the high position, we know City will always defend. Coming on one side and Leroy Sané's pace, Coman kind of pretty much took RK on the outside two or three times, and it was obvious that his pace was going to get him to the byline. So all of a sudden, a bit of a worry for City. But the big chance, as you say, maybe 17 minutes on the clock, Leroy Sané putting it wide. When if he puts that one in, we could be talking of a different thing. You'd like to think City would have kept the composure and the discipline. But it was really interesting, Rob. So after the game, Bernardo Silva went to one of the desks at the end of the game, and he talked about, and it was a brilliant insight from, you know, a magical player. He sometimes, Rob, he has the ball and it almost looks like he's tied to his feet. His little dribbles and his step-overs and his creativity. But what was more rewarding to hear from Bernardo Silva, it wasn't just about in possession. It was interesting, he said, he came out with a couple of things, and I remember just writing them down and saying...
Yeah, I did the same thing. Said, I wrote them down too.
We've learned that in big European competitions, you can't dominate all 90 minutes. And I thought, it struck a chord with me, Rob, because it for two reasons. One of the reasons is he's 100% right, and he was talking about when you're playing a Bayern Munich, you know, and Bayern of the past have probably been a bit stronger than the team of now. Your Real Madrid, your Liverpools, your teams at the very highest end, they're going to have a spell when they're going to have some possession. And you've got to, I think the word in current football is you've got to be able to suffer, you've got to be able to stay with that. Hmm. The other thing that came out of that sort of conversation, Rob, where he said, you know, I play in midfield, and he said sometimes I look behind me and I see Akanji, I see Ake, I see Laporte, I see Diaz, I see Stones. He says, yeah, we can deal with that now. But and then watching the game, it wasn't that just that back five. And you talk about Rodri, and I made a note on him because he's special in this sense, how they are. Mm-hmm. But there were times, Rob, when all nine outfield players, and I'm going to exclude Erling Haaland at times because he's the one who stays. All nine players, Jack Grealish and Bernardo Silva in particular, were back, were condensed, were making it difficult for Bayern to play. It's almost like there's a realisation, Rob, that, yeah, the other team can have the ball. And I used to think, and it was interesting how Bernardo Silva said it, and this is my interpretation of what he said. It might be completely wrong, but it was almost as though City used to get a bit embarrassed if other people had the ball. Like, we're the possession team. What are you doing with the ball? And they'd almost like want it back and almost, you know, do kamikaze things to get it back. Feels to me like they're saying they're more respectful of the opposition. Listen, they can have some time and we can be keep a clean sheet or keep it tight and we can still go and win the game. And that's where I feel the change is, Rob. That's where I feel it seems to me, and Bernardo Silva in the interview said the same things, like, there's a change in mentality of the group now.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And it's something I wrote down all the quotes as well, Rob. And it's, you know, like, I think it's a week ago, I think I made a comment of Real Madrid that at times they're okay with you having the ball. They're okay with it. Mm-hmm. They do exactly what he's saying. Yeah. Real Madrid don't feel they've got to dominate the possession of the football every single minute of every single game. They accept that other good teams in this competition are going to have the ball, and they totally sit back. Mm-hmm. They totally sit back, which brings in their ability to counter-attack. Yeah. And guess what? Man City, they're pretty good at counter-attack now as well, with Erling Haaland up front. That's very great at running in behind with his pace to do the damage, of course. So it absolutely makes sense. It's got to come from the manager a little bit, Rob. And I wonder if it's just one of those little things that he's just relaxed a little bit off. I mean, his Bayern Munich, his Barcelona team did have the ball all the time.
Yeah.
So I understand where that comes from, where he wants to have total control of the game with the football. But maybe after a few seasons where they haven't won it and thinking hard about it, so we're putting together, Rob, two or three different pieces with this Man City side. Of course, the big man up front that done the business again is a difference. The system is different. The extra centre back is different. Mm. And now with a bit of mentality of Bayern Munich are pretty good. Mm. And by the way, this happened in the first game as well.
Yeah.
Okay, you have your bit possession, and then we're okay to sit back, and then we'll have ours. So that's another little change that might with a combination of those, I mean, I just think they are favourites, Rob. I think they're favourites to go all the way. Fascinating semi-final against Real Madrid, of course, a big matchup we saw last year.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things to take this in a different direction, just real quick, Rob. I'm a bit of a loss for words, and I don't want us to change this podcast all about handball again. But
we have sort of touched on this road, and again, I don't want to go to this negative one part of the game. I mean, Upamecano's coming out. He puts his hands behind his back initially, which ain't a great position for a defender, but he's obviously aware of it. It's not natural. Then he almost takes a more natural position as he's trying to block, and that arm comes away, and he flicks off his arm. The referee, like, no one else is particularly appealing. The referee, who I thought enjoyed the camera on him, I'll ever put it that way, looked like he didn't want to be part of the event, which I don't never like him, referees. Basically, Robert, what we know is if in any way the ball touches the hand or arm in a European game, it's going to be a penalty kick. That's what we know.
Unless the arms are rock solid by your side.
You basically have to put them right by your side and almost glue them down. Because if they even come away a couple of inches, you're not going to get it. So,
which is so unfair.
It's so unnatural. And it changed the game. And what the problem is, the law's got to change, Rob. You know, we keep blaming the referee and VAR. And someone said, the referee's interpretation is probably right based on the law as it's written. We've got to change the law, Rob. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's enough, mate. I don't want to go into any further. It's got to change because that's not fair, Rob. Goals are so difficult to get in football. So difficult. They're so precious. They're so valuable. Yeah. And yet you can give a goal pretty much with something as, you know, innocuous as what the both of them, to be fair.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just think it's such a serious thing. I just wanted to bring it up real quick. Mm-hmm. Not that it had a massive impact on the game. Yeah. I think we, over the two legs, appreciate what Man City have done, how they've changed a little bit. And Bayern Munich, you know, Robert Lewandowski was an incredible striker for them. And they haven't decided to go big on a replacement. Mm-hmm. Shubhamooting that we talk about, we saw with Stoke City in the Premier League, that was okay.
Yeah, he scored a few goals, but he doesn't seem at that level. Can I chuck one at you just before we move to maybe in terms of where we see City in the competition? I suppose it's part question, part observation, really, in that the City we've talked about, and it ties into our, you know, being a little bit more determined with the defending, understanding that the opposition are going to have the ball. When I looked at City yesterday, Rob, there's a slightly more muscular appearance about City than there was in the past. And by that, I don't mean like, I'm not talking muscular, you know, going and putting massive tackles on, but there's a size and a physicality to United, to City now that wasn't always there. So Zinchenko was a lovely footballer. And if you have Foden, and if you have Bernardo Silva, and you have Gundogan and
Cancelo.
And players, they're good footballers, but there's a little bit more, you know, you've got the big lad up front who's a freak, who's a monster. You've got Rodri, who's an absolute star, who runs under the radar. He's my underappreciated Champions League player of the week so far. I just think he's the golden piece in the thing. You've got now a back four of centre-backs who are all strong. You know, if Walker comes on, you got physicality. If Laporte comes on, you got physicality. It's almost like there's another option for City to have with this group than we've seen them before. If the football didn't always get their way, they lost out. There's a bit more. They're a bit more robust. Maybe even your lovely word, durable. They might be a bit more durable, Rob, than we've seen.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does go back to what we said, Rob, about the little changes, and it's a good point. And they are much more durable. They're more physical. They're better defensively. Kanji is a flipping wonderful addition. What a find he is, by the way. If it wasn't big money for Mamadou Kanji, he's not a super young player. He's not. He has come in and looks so comfortable. And that's kind of the big. One of the things that Pep's changed is to say to Akanji, well, actually, I want you at right back. And John Stones, I'll put you into centre back, because the pacey wingers, probably in most European sides now, certainly in the next leg they're going to get against in the semi final against Vinicius Junior at Real Madrid, is in the wider areas. And Akanji's quicker. You know, he's quicker and he's a better one-on-one defender. We saw it in this tie over two legs. So, it's another way that Pep has just turned up the physical dial.
Yeah.
Something that we haven't seen before. And I think it helps the balance. It helps the artists and soldiers thing that I say about Rob now. There's more soldiers in this team because of that. Yeah. That balance has changed a little bit. Which is helping them, and you make another. I mean, also, have you got a big lad up front that you know the goal comes from?
Yeah,
you know, he the long ball, Rob, wasn't it? I think
into long ball. Bruyne gets up. He heads it down.
It looks like
it's a great little head down. It's a great little head down, by the way, to keep it alive.
But that's not.
And he makes that looping run, and then he's in.
Yeah, and he finishes this time after missing his penalty. Yeah. Crazy how he missed his penalty a little bit earlier on. So no, I think. You know, we're saying the same things, Rob. This team that's going places, and now I don't know whether you want to go on the other game first, Rob, before we get into how that might look. We're going to talk Chelsea, Real Madrid, but they are going to play Real Madrid. But are you thinking that Man City now are the team to beat, or do you still favour Real Madrid? Or?
I'm thinking Man City is the team to beat, but again, just sort of picking up a few quotes, watching a few interviews. You know, it was interesting that Pep said, if you want to win the Champions League, you have to win against Madrid.
Yeah.
Basically, like, you know, they are the team, Rob. And sometimes you can take a little bit away about form. You can take a little bit about how you've got there. You can take a little bit about you know, how defensively good they are. If Real Madrid have a day, Man City could struggle over two games, Rob. That's how good this Real Madrid team is. And the guy in charge of them is a very understated, clever, smart, astute coach who will have a plan, Rob. He'll have a plan to do. I still think City have enough because eventually at some point, I think you get your free haul and, you know, Grealish at the moment's playing with a real confidence and understanding of his role. Be interesting, the Ake, Rob, was probably the only negative that we should talk about. He pulled up, didn't he, with what looks like a hamstring. Now, apparently he said he'd had a hamstring before. Doesn't feel as bad. We are going to have to wait the medical reports from City. But that would be a massive blow if he's out for any length of time, based on how long it's taken him to settle in position and now how important he is to that back four.
Yeah, Laporte is an absolute natural replacement, isn't it, for this left-back, left side of the back three type of position. So he's totally ready to come and do that. But that would be a shame because Ake's had a brilliant season. Yeah, we'll see how that... They're difficult. The hamstrings are difficult to...
Yeah,
sometimes it can be three, four, five, 6 weeks. Sometimes it's like two or three days.
Yeah.
But no, job well done by Man City. Difficult tie. You know, good atmosphere at the Allianz Arena. You know, all the big wigs are in the top there. Oliver Kahn, which there's reports out that he could be losing his position or something.
Oh, could he?
Yeah, I not confirmed yet, but I think there's reports out there that he might be on his way out as chairman of Bayern Munich. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Still fancy City over two legs, Rob?
What, against Real Madrid?
Yeah.
I do. Yeah, I do. I mean, let's talk about him now, Rob, because, of course, it's the next game we're going to talk about. Chelsea 0, Real Madrid 2, aggregate score of 4-0. Rodrigo, both goals in this one in the second half, 58 minutes, and I got 80 minutes for the two goals.
Yeah.
God blimey. Yeah, let's talk about Real Madrid first, Rob. The Chelsea, there's so much to kind of impact there. But and then, of course, we can talk about this and how it might affect the Man City game. Obviously, the main player that didn't have a brilliant game on this one is Vinicius Jr.
Yeah.
He is a special talent on the left-hand side. Rodrigo got the goals, of course, from the right-hand side. Karim Benzema is a threat himself at the middle.
Yeah.
Valverde, superb assist where he runs through, knocks the ball back.
He played really well game.
Yeah, for Rodrigo. Kroos, Modric in field. Kavinga, the brilliant central midfield player that's making a position himself.
Yeah.
He might not like, but he's playing great at left back. Alaba, and Militao, I think, is one of the best defenders around right now in the world, European football, Militao. And Carvajal, the aggressive little right back.
Yeah.
And a brilliant goalkeeper in Thibaut Courtois. I thought they were a little shaky early on.
Think they played that. I think it's interesting. Over the course of these two games, I've never felt Real Madrid had to play that well to win both games. I thought the front three from Madrid wasn't as we've known it. Vinicius didn't have a sparkling day. Benzema, the similar. Just talk. Benzema might have had a bit of an injury that didn't play, I think, at weekend and came in. But then they get Rodrigo, Rob, on the other side, who's sometimes like the poorer relation. He still is quick. I mean, he's a brilliant footballer. He's a threat. that will be a threat to City in those wide areas with him and Vinicius. As you say, it was a day for maybe not the headline makers. Valverde, who's probably the lesser known of with Cruz and Modric, I thought was brilliant all day. Yeah. What a great athlete. Lovely technical footballer. Times and again, I heard Ancelotti say when they had a bit of an issue with Kante in the position he played and gave him a problem, he switched Valverde over there just to deal with it for a moment, just till we got sorted and stopped Camavinga being exposed. So I just think with this guy in charge, with this group of players, Rob, I still think they'll quietly believe they can get past the City. Again, they didn't have to play that well in two games to win 2-0 against the Chelsea team and go through 4-0 on aggregate and make it to another semi-final. I think, was it something like three? What did I see the number of semi-finals? It was some crazy number, like 30-odd, I think, semi-finals or something they've made now in Champions League, which is just incredible for this football club and the way that they play. And, I thought they did what they needed to do. Didn't concede goals, whether a bit of luck, whether good goalkeeping. Courtois came up with a couple of big saves. And I know he's a little unhappy that he doesn't quite get the respect in the UK that he should have done for you know, and I think he kissed his badge once during the Chelsea fans didn't like. But, I was impressed with Madrid, even though I didn't think they played particularly well as they did in the first game.
Yeah, wherever you look through the team, Rob, they've got quality. Mm. You know, Courtois is a brilliant goalkeeper. He makes a massive save from Cucurella. What is it
just before half time? Yeah,
N'Golo Kante was the other chance, Rob, wasn't it? Two big chances that I made a note of. That's like, wow, these are big
game
moments.
Changes, aren't they? Yeah,
yeah, and of course the debate afterwards on the TV shows and stuff is about the team and the inability for Chelsea to score goals. It's been a problem they've had for a long period of time now. Yeah. Team selection, Rob, I know Frank was defensive in his interview, saying that, well, for 60 minutes, I thought it looked pretty good. It's just when you have got Sterling, Felix and Mudrik, I suppose, on the bench and you're playing Conor Gallagher and N'Golo Kante in those high positions. I understand why when you want to win the ball back and you want to pressure and press, those two are really good at that. And that kind of worked out. But ultimately, you got a score. And, you know, is there enough goal scorers in that lineup? And you could argue that there's not. And I know changes were made later on.
Yeah.
But those three players came in. Did you... What would you say about that, Rob, about the lineup and picking Kante in a goal-scoring position?
Yeah, I part of me understood it because I think, you know, Frank's scratching at the moment, Rob. He, you know, three straight defeats before this game. But in all honesty, the reality was it didn't work. The reality was it didn't work because it works if they do that. So what he bought, I thought, was Premier League hustle. Conor Gallagher, good energy, good legs. N'Golo Kante, good job. But Real Madrid are better than Premier League hustle, and they'll find a way, Rob. And if you don't take your chances, and if Cucurella doesn't take the chance, then, you know, it's okay because you've got Modric, you had Sterling, you had Felix, you had Mount, you had Pulisic all on the bench, who goal scorers. What he put in, I made my note, was he's gone for harrying...
Yeah, energy.
An energy against control and creativity. He's lost some creativity. Activity and control that you'll get from the real number 10s or 2-8 who can go forward and make it happen. And they didn't score a goal again, Rob. You know, so the age-old problem is there that however he fits it up, and he might argue that, you know, Felix had been playing and Mudrik's been playing and Mudrik came and missed a chance even though it was offside. But maybe his argument is, well, they aren't scoring anyway, so this kept us in the game for 60 minutes. And I kind of get it. But it failed. You know, we have to say at the end of the day that the project failed. It didn't work. They didn't win. They didn't get a goal. And that's the damning indictment on the group, that this group of $800 million worth of talent spent and has won the Champions League not that long ago is miles away from getting back to those positions right now.
So we know that Chelsea Football Club, Rob, are interviewing managers, like, as we speak, probably. Yeah. And they have done. Yeah. They've spoke to Nagelsmann. Yeah. Luis Enrique apparently is distancing himself from it a little bit. The question now becomes, with this result, it does go on Frank Lampard. And I think he's lost the four, isn't it? Four out of four he's lost now.
Four straight losses, yeah.
Two against Real Madrid. I mean, yeah. It's not easy, of course. But that was the hope that Frank Lampard could somehow galvanize the fans, the players, to pull out something that was unexpected. Mm. That hasn't happened.
No.
Now, for me, go and find the next manager and get him in position as soon as possible. And I'll tell you for why, Rob, because we all know that the way that Todd Bowley and Clear Lake went on a crazy spending spree when they first took over this football club is now a massive problem. Number one, they've got, and who was talking about it? The amount of players. Oh, it's Thiago Silva after the game, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, very interesting interview,
listening to Bernardo Silva was informative. Yeah. Listening to Thiago Silva was really informative. Absolutely. Basically saying everything that most people are saying. Too many new players are coming in.
They had
to expand the blimmin' locker room to fit the extra players in. And he said the same thing, players aren't playing, they asked to stop. I mean, this is Thiago Silva saying that. Mm. So that the issue of bringing all those guys in to make it bigger, the worrying thing that maybe that some of them are not that great.
Yeah.
And now on the back of no European football revenue for next year, we know he spent a ton of money. We know they've made losses before that. They're going to be in financial fair play situations where they got to sell a lot of their players. And it works better financially if they sell the homegrown players.
Yeah, the English, yeah.
So the Mason Mounts, the Loftus
Gallaghers.
The Gallaghers of this world. Yeah. Now, some of those players, particularly Mason Mount, is a player for me that you just don't – why would you ever – you should try. He's a brilliant player. He's a great age. He loves the club. Been there forever. And yet, it looks like he's going to go. There's so much of that that's wrong. So all I'm saying is, on the manager, get somebody in place. And I know they're right. Might be a Real Madrid position, but get somebody who wants to manage Chelsea and get him in now, Rob, because he's between now and the end of the season.
Yeah.
When they've got to sell players, the new manager can just say, "Well, him, and him." Don't get rid of him, don't get rid of Mount, or don't get rid of Gallagher, but get rid of Havertz or get rid of whoever it is. And if you bring in somebody in the summer, that becomes a rush process that's going to be difficult. Well, so,
do you realistically think, though, Rob? I just don't think, and I don't disagree at all with your viewpoint and the plan of action.
Right.
What I do think is that this won't happen between now and the end of the season.
Why?
Because I don't think it's the way this guy, this club will run it. And I think they'll feel like, let's keep Frank till the end of the season. And then we'll do the swap over when the season's done. And I'm with you. Listen, I'm not saying what I would do. I'm saying what I think will happen. And that's another 6-week period gone. That's another 6 weeks of not making decisions. It's another 6 weeks. Let me just paint you a little scenario that's not great for Chelsea fans. So I'm Mudrick. I'm on 150 grand a week, let's say. And then they want to sell me and somebody wants to pay me 100 grand a week. Guess what? I ain't going. And then I'm Pulisic and they want 50 million for you. And the team who want to buy you want to pay 30 million for you. And your wages are getting cut. Guess what? I ain't going. And I can make a list of players, Rob, who are better being at Chelsea not playing than being somewhere else playing and not earning the salary. And some agents and some players will be like, no, I'm good. I'm okay, thanks. I'll sit. I've got a 4-year contract.
Some
I've got
a 5-year
contract. I've got a 7-year contract.
Nine. I think there's a nine.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reality, Rob, is that's where we're at. And so even if my sense would be like you, okay, Frank, we came in for that honeymoon, the lift. Hasn't worked. No, you're still a legend here at the football club. Yeah. You had a great try. Thanks very much. Nagelsmann, in you come. Have a look at it. Who do you like? Who don't you like? What system are we playing?
That's what should happen.
Who fits? Who doesn't? Exactly what should happen. I have no belief. I have no confidence that this will happen, that we'll have another manager in that seat before the summer, Rob. I don't think anything will happen before the summer.
Well, that's going to be difficult. That's going to be difficult.
Of course it's going to be difficult.
Turn it around.
It makes him... I mean, the problem is that somebody comes in now. This guy's got to make some very instant decisions, like who are the ones to go, who are the ones to stay. Almost without having to look at them, almost
well, in the summer, if the manager comes. I know that's the whole point of bringing them in now. And there's people available that are available out of work, high profile people. I think Pochettino was a recent one today they were interviewing. So there's people there that are ready to go straight away. So that's.
I've got a question for you, mate, because it's kind of one of those that I want you to take your time on it and I want you to give it the proper thought because I'm really interested in your answer. So Chelsea squad as it is sitting today. You know, we're out of the Champions League. We've got nothing to go for. But the squad of players, and I'm talking everybody, and then you can do your cutting and whatever you want further down the line. So that's scenario one that I want you to think of. Scenario two is the group that Eddie Howe took over or the group that Newcastle are now in terms of player quality and squad. Just hold that one. And then the second comparison is Manchester United. The group that Ten Hag took on and the group where they are now. So he's bought some in, he's starting to show his route. Who's got the better squad of all those three teams? Chelsea. Let me give you my answer.
Yeah, Chelsea. I'd probably say Chelsea, but I'm not by a ton. And I know what you
maybe
mean.
Maybe not by a ton.
Some of these players overpaid a lot of them.
Yeah, if you look what Eddie's done with Newcastle in 1 year... Yeah. What I'm trying to say for Chelsea fans, if the right appointment comes in and things, there's a group there that's workable. I'm not saying, you know, we all know the centre-forward position is the centre-forward position. That's got to be dealt with. But I'm not saying, in terms of Fofana and Kante and Thiago Silva and Reece James and Chilwell and Enzo and Kovacic and Pulisic and Felix and, you know, I'm not saying they're all play. I'm not saying they're all on top of the game. I'm not saying they're all going to come good. But what I'm just saying, Rob, in basic, that isn't a bad group of footballers for somebody with talent to go in and manage.
Yeah, agreed. You know, we all know that there's a striker issue there. Yeah. You know that they need a regular scorer. But even that, Rob, that's not everything. We know now that all the other good sides at the top of the Premier League score goals from wingers, and they got plenty of wingers. They're still not scoring goals. It's not as easy as saying it, and I don't like it when it's like. Well, yeah, we know they need a centre-forward in the ideal world. Most great teams have got one, but you can still have other people contributing and scoring goals. They're not even doing that. So it's a bigger thing. It's a bigger picture of the whole club, the team, is why they're not performing. Another random one, Rob, before we move on, right? And this is something that is a few days old now, this, in terms of news story. Todd Boehly, I think it was after the Brighton game, goes into the dressing room and speaks to the players. Mm. Now... That brings up the immediate question, should a owner go into the manager's realm, go into the dressing room and say what he wants to say to the group of players? And what's interesting, Rob, before you answer, I know the answer from Frank Lampard. He was asked a question. I know his answer. And it's interesting because, you know, I guess what we both do is we check, you know, in between. Well, when I work out, I put all the videos on from YouTube and different managers and stuff like that. And I saw... a comment from a legendary Premier League manager, which was very different to Frank's response. So
he didn't like it. So the other manager didn't like it.
I'll tell you answer first, and I'll tell you what he said.
Okay. So putting all my cards on the table, I played at a club at Wimbledon that was a little bit maybe weird and crazy at times, and we had an owner called Sam Amann who would sit in the dressing room with you. Would sit during team talks, would come in after. Sam had a great way. So say I was picking up you from a corner and you scored the corner, he'd come into the dressing room after and he'd go make a big thing of looking on the board and he'd look at me and then he'd look at the board as if, you weren't getting away with it. So that was what was the norm. Sam Amann was in the dressing room. It was his club. That's how he felt. He wanted to connect with the players. And it was a different time. It was a different, he's a different personality. I don't think part of an owner going in a dressing room is all that bad, because sometimes you can argue, like, oh, we never see him, we don't know what to think, whatever. Mm. But you can be too friendly, you can be too pally, there can be messages that are mixed. I'm not quite sure it's the right environment. I think you employ a guy to do that job for you. So I don't like that it seems a bit continual and it's kind of the thread. And now with, you know, TV cameras are waiting for him, watching him, Rob, walking over the pitch and going in, which I don't particularly like. But I don't think Frank's in a position where he can say what he likes or what he doesn't like. He's on caretaker role for however many games from here to the end of the season. So, you know, I'm a little bit in between on that one. I'm not over as strong as some are, because it's something I've known and it became the norm with me. But this is a guy who, at the moment, Rob, everything he does is under scrutiny. And I don't think it's helpful. I don't think it's helpful for the situation that the club are in at the moment for this to be another story that, at the moment, everybody's finding a way to smack Chelsea. And this is just another way of doing it.
Well, for those who didn't see it, Frank basically said, yeah, I don't mind it. Yeah. Again, yeah. He's probably going to say that. You know, he's the owner of the club. If he wants to come in, and you know. So, but understandable. The other person, Rob, was Arsene Wenger. And he was asked the same question. And his answer was totally different. There's no place in the dressing room for the owner. In fact, he said, I have it in my contract before I take a job. It's in my contract that the owner is not involved in team selection or into the dressing room to talk to the players. And some of the reasons he gave, you know, what if players start to think they can have relationships with the owner and might go behind the manager's back? What if the top bowler comes in?
I would say some do, Rob. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, this is not yours is a really interesting one, Rob, because it's only the trust of it's only because. That Wimbledon dressing room was. You could go to Sam and Mam and say, you know what, it's Gaffer. So because he has a relationship with you, because he's because he's in there a lot. Yeah. So Wenger would say that's incredibly dangerous. Mm. And also, if he comes in there and says a few words, they go out the next week and win. He might want to come in all the time. It's just not. It's just, he just said it's not something. You know, I just thought it was interesting. You got Lampard saying, an experienced guy is like, no chance. So,
but there's also some owners, Rob, and it's interesting, just without labeling the point before we move on the Champions League, just that there'd be some owners who wouldn't. Abramovich would never have that issue because he wouldn't want to go down there. It's not, you know, we hardly ever saw him do an interview, never mind anything else. We've seen more of Todd Bowley in the less than 12 months he's been at the football club than we saw Abramovich over his whole era, and heard more from him.
Yeah, just to finish it up, mate. We had a chairman, Steve Gibson, who's a legendary chairman owner at Middlesbrough, and there was one occasion he got involved, Rob, and it was not in the dressing room. It was a meeting like the Monday or Tuesday afterwards, basically trying to pull us all together because we were in a disaster, bottom of the Premier League table, or there was fighting or something going on. So that's one time in 12 years that he came in. So just to give you a little insight, and no other manager whatever owner in my 18, 20 years did it. So, yeah, interesting. Just an interesting thing that popped up. Okay, let's move it on.
Should we just talk about the other games in the Champions League? Because there was a couple of other interesting games, wasn't there? Napoli and AC Milan.
Yeah.
Napoli advanced 2-1. 1-1 on the night. 1-0 from the first leg for AC Milan to advance over Napoli, which was some big surprise, really, when you think how well Napoli and how far they were heading in the league. And, you know, even 1-0 down from the first leg, you probably thought that they'd come back. Osimhen was back in the team. You know, so a lot of positives for a Napoli team that's been one of the stories of the season in European football. But credit again to AC Milan and Olivier Giroud and you know, good old names, Leao and players we've seen in the tournament in the early stages. AC Milan, I think it's their first semi-final for 16 years, mate, you know, which, you know, a team as great as they've been, the team that used to win it most regularly probably when we were growing up, into the good time.
Yeah, they are. I mean, if you're Napoli, Rob, the season they're having under Spalletti, the way that they are the best team in Italian football to go out at this stage must be incredibly disappointing for them. I mean, they pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed, and Milan, you know, for the most part, stayed behind the ball. The Rafael Leao run for the goal was special. It was absolutely special. You know, he also, Leao got the penalty, didn't he, that Giroud missed the penalty.
Yeah, he missed the penalty.
Leao's run to pull the ball back for him to score the goal was pretty amazing. And just think from Napoli's point of view, they missed a penalty as well. We know about Osimhen, but the other player that's a star player with an incredibly difficult name to pronounce, which I will try.
Yeah.
Kvaratskhelia.
Kvaratskhelia.
Yeah, I think it's a Georgian, isn't he? International. Brilliant winger. Brilliant winger. Goal scoring winger. Missed the penalty that would have given them the boost maybe to go on and force extra time or something. But the no, I mean, it's the Milan story is a great one. I went back, Rob, and looked at the team that last got to the semi-final. It was an Ancelotti side.
Yeah.
They won the tournament that year. They beat Liverpool in the final that year. And it's the team of players like Maldini, Nesta, Seedorf, Gattuso, Pirlo, Kaká, Filippo Inzaghi. So AC Milan, I think they're the second most, Rob. I think Real Madrid have the most Champions League or the you know European Cup as it was.
Yeah.
AC Milan is second, I think, on seven. Mm. So this is a giant team with amazing history that haven't been at those levels of that team for a long, long period of time, but now go into you know, a semi-final against Inter Milan at the San Siro over two legs. It's going to be great for Italian football. Fair play to them. But I just think Napoli, God blimey, this has been such a good side.
Yeah, you just wonder if this could be the breakup of them, Rob, as well.
Players might go.
There's a talk in the one or two Offerman. I think there's a few Premier League clubs, probably including Chelsea, who are interested in him and Man United. So, yeah, it would be a shame. And obviously, it would have been nice to see a great old club like Napoli back into it. But certainly, a Milan derby sort of mouth-watering prospect ahead when we think of, Inter Milan making it through past Benfica as well. 3-3 on the night, real dramatic game. Inter 3-1 up, Benfica getting it back to 3-3. But the two-goal advantage from the first leg, enough to see Inter through. And we get this incredible semi-final at the San Siro.
Mm. Yeah, and it's going to be, this stage of competition, all the games are good, you know, and it's, you know, we sit here on the Thursday and we try and take it all in. But when you think about the two semi-finals, Rob, I mean, I think that the Italian, the All-Milan final is semi-final is pretty amazing, really, when you consider those two clubs playing the same stadium, the San Siro Stadium, Giuseppe Meazza, I think, is the official name for the stadium. And not doing so great in Serie A, certainly Milan right now. But no, we'll see. There's going to be one team from Serie A in the final of the Champions League. And the other one, of course, that we've talked about in terms of Real Madrid and Man City,
are going to be
the favourite. Whoever wins that's going to be the favourite. So, you know, that's the one that, of course, I'll be quickest to watch, given how great both teams are, and particularly for us following the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, Man City are the team this year, and we know they're in an amazing tussle at the top of the Premier League title with Arsenal for that.
Yeah.
But this chance now, I got to think that they're all, and not just the fans or the manager or the players or us lot or anybody else, surely, you know, it is the best chance for them, Rob, to win this championship, isn't it?
For sure. Two great games to look forward to, two great occasions, massive clubs, and you know, maybe this might be City's year. Just before we move on for the Champions League, mate, something caught my thought, and it was a note I'd made, and it was interesting, and I know Chelsea fans might have had enough of us sort of giving them advice or what's going on, looking from the outside. But it just came back to me at the end of the game where at Chelsea, Stamford Bridge midweek, and Ancelotti and Frank hugged, and obviously I think Frank played under him and they had won competitions, etc. And part of me was just looking at Chelsea and saying, right now, Rob, wouldn't Ancelotti just be a calming influence? For 2 years, they were talking that he might be leaving Madrid and going to Brazil, national team, and two other places. And it just struck me that thought, right now what this Chelsea need, right now what this Chelsea owner needs, is somebody like an Ancelotti. Can go in, can get hold of the football club, can organise it, can get a team that can certainly find goals, and he's just got a presence about him, Rob, a calming presence, because everything seems like it's everywhere with Chelsea at the moment. It's boiling out of control. And I just thought, what a great guy this Ancelotti is. He's just such a lovely, cool man. And he had a lovely shot of him kissing Rodrigo after the end of the game. He says, you know, I give him a hug, but I have to give him a kiss when he scores goals. Almost feel that's what Chelsea need to take the next step for a couple of years to get that club back in shape. And then who knows who can take it on. But just a thought.
No, I absolutely know where you're coming from. I just feel, Rob, that it needs somebody else. I think it needs a totally fresh, hungry, you know, like a manager on the up, like a Nagelsmann.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess a Pochettino is more in the mold of Ancelotti that's chilled. And
yeah.
But I don't know. I think they need a progressive coach that's going to really work with this young group to try and reach their max. But no, it's amazing competition. And Ancelotti, I mean, he's a ledge, isn't he? Absolute ledge. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some Europa League football, Europa and Europa League conference. Let's start with the Europa League, because Manchester United got themselves 2-0 up in the first leg, ended up 2-2 going to Sevilla, and we know how difficult that can be. A Sevilla team that won the competition 6 times, got a brilliant record at home in the competition. I think they're 26 games, 23 wins, so it was never going to be easy for Manchester United. But I don't think United fans, or I don't think Eric Ten Hag thought would end up a 3-0 defeat, a 5-2 aggregate, and Manchester United dumped out of the Europa League.
No, I don't think so. I didn't see all of this when I had to pop out today. So I saw the goals and I, you know, and the stories and stuff like that. Shocking kind of result. I mean, and they would have known what that stadium's like.
Well, should have done
in Sevilla and the atmosphere and the scarves and everything else. I mean, and they're a good side. They're a good side with a good manager.
Yeah.
Of course, United will go to the goals conceded. I immediately think of the first goal and the third goal, Rob. And David De Gea, who I think's had a pretty good season with some of the saves that he's made, is not the best with his feet and with decision-making. And, you know, Maguire will probably get a lot of criticism for not, you know, it's off his pass that they get him for the first goal. But how much of it, Rob, was do you put on that De Gea, his decision to bobble the ball into Maguire?
Yeah, I mean, the two reasons I put more blame on De Gea is one is that as a goalkeeper, when you're looking on pitch, you've got the full picture, Rob. You can see who's closing from behind, who's coming from the sides, where the danger might be coming from. So I just think, in those situations, away from home, in that atmosphere, at the stage of the game, what's the most beneficial thing to do? To me, it'd be get it up the pitch and not take the risk. The second thing also, Rob, and we've all been in teams where sometimes you've got a teammate who's not having the greatest time or something. I just think, know your players as well. I'm not sure that Harry Maguire really wants that ball there.
He's in a difficult position.
He's in a difficult position. I don't think he's checked his shoulder. I don't think he knows what's on. I think as you roll it into him, I can sort of almost see people converging on him. I just thought it's a tough one for Maguire in that situation. As a goalkeeper, as De Gea, I think I can get him out of this. I can allow him not to have to deal with this issue. And one of my old managers used to say, if you think you're passing a problem, don't make the pass. And I think he was passing a problem on to Maguire, and there was a problem that Maguire couldn't solve. And I think it could have been easier if he'd have gone long and saved Maguire. You know, I'm sure he's going to get sick. I mean, it's really funny, Rob, and I don't want to go too deep into it because obviously, I mean, Harry Maguire's a current Manchester United captain and an England player and has played very well for England recently in tournaments. But we were just talking very casually off air, weren't we? I think it was at the weekend or last week or so, just about Harry Maguire and him coming back in the team and how difficult it must be for him, you know, on a week-by-week basis, playing games, not being the star that maybe he thought he was going to be, the captain of the football club, how his mental health, and he's admitted it, has been affected by it. It's just such a, you know, these are so many great things about being a professional footballer, and it's you know, we'd all give a right arm to do it, and we were fortunate to play. But being Harry Maguire right now must be a bit of a difficult thing. I said, Rob, sometimes, can you imagine he goes down to the petrol station to fill his car, he goes shopping with the kids, he pops out to the cinema, or in everyday life, I'm sure he's always got his neck on turn and worrying about what people are saying or reaction to him. It's a tough thing for a player. I don't care where he's from, how much money he earns, or how big the transfer fee. He's in a difficult spot at the moment.
He is, and I think I remember the conversation we had, Rob, and it's like you try and put yourself into his shoes, right? Now, if I put myself into his shoes, you're right. All that stuff's coming. He will have to he will have to find a way to deal with it. He'd have to find a mechanism, you know, to try and get through it, because it must be an absolute nightmare when everywhere you go. But you know, his mindset will have found a way to deal with it. And I hope
social media is unrelenting, isn't it? And I mean, he's a target before he kicks a ball, and then you know something happens that he's involved in. He's going to be more and more of a target. So it's just another side to the game that you know sometimes people maybe don't think about, and is difficult. And
he's a human, he's just a bloke like everybody else knows. He's just a normal human. I agree. I just think De Gea thought he could just pop it off, and he couldn't. The angle wasn't there. Because that happens all the time where a goalie rolls it in there, and you just pop it off to one of the fullbacks and you play out. That wasn't on Albion at all. And De Gea as well for the third goal, Rob. It's a bad mistake.
It's one of those, Rob, today. I was watching the game. I know you were popping in and out, but it was one of those days, and it leads to a conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago about when Man United are good and the football's good, it's great. When things aren't going well, there's still a bit of a glitch with United. You don't quite know how to deal with that. And what happens in the end is they make mistakes and give away goals. We saw it with Man United. We've seen it early in the season. It's something that Ten Hag's going to have to address, mate.
Yeah, he is. And listen, you know, it seems like we can go from one game to another game. Mm. I really enjoyed United and Manchester United in the last game. The way that the width that they play with and some of the front players are starting to feel, you know, Anthony looks more comfortable. But they're not finished yet. They're nowhere near finished yet. We all know that. And that's a difficult tie against Sevilla that's got a great history in this tournament. A difficult second leg there. They're nowhere near where they need to be, but there's signs. There's signs. And I always say with a manager, I just want to see it. I want to see what he's trying to do. And I think we've seen that from Ten Hag, but there's a lot of pieces. He hasn't got his best central defenders. He ain't got them today. And De Gea sometimes makes these errors. You know, it was just a difficult night. Every time when I saw the highlights and bits of the game, when I'm out and about, I got out my phone and I'm trying to watch it. It looked like they'll get nowhere.
Interesting. So no Bruno, Rob, which...
Well, suspended.
Yeah, suspended. They missed him a little bit more maybe than I thought as well. Just a little bit of midfield control. Yeah, he's wasn't quite player, the same with Eriksen and Casemiro. But yeah, work for Ten Hag. Obviously, really disappointed. They've got to get themselves right for the weekend FA Cup semi-final against a very good Brighton team, which won't be easy. Let's move on to the other European game before we just wrap things up, mate. That was West Ham in the European Conference League. 1-1 with Ghent from the first leg. Really good 4-1 win at home. Another David Moyes. When he seems to be in trouble, he finds a way. And Mikel Antonio, Pacator, Declan Rice got a really nice goal running distance and scoring and maybe answering Mozalek, Roy Keane and Graham Souness. Not enough goals, not enough productivity. Yeah. Maybe that helps. And Antonio got a second for a 5-2 aggregate. So West Ham advance in the competition. And I think we spoke about David Moyes, haven't we? He's a survivor, mate, and he's come out with another good result. And it's West Ham VAZ Altmore now in the Conference League semi-final, May 11th and May the 18th. So just as we're heading towards the conclusion of the Premier League, you'd like to think from West Ham's point of view, they might have won a couple of games by then and got themselves open, can kind of go into that and enjoy it and look forward to it rather than going into games, but worrying in between that they're still fighting for the life at the bottom end of the table.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to be all right in the Premier League. Mm. You know, we weren't on the same page with whether David Moyes is going to stay there. I made the point where if he wins this competition, that gets him into the Europa League next year.
Yeah.
Granted, it's been a disappointing season, but I think he'll stay on. And you were just a bit, I'm not sure he will. Yeah. But other good managers available. We'll see, mate. We'll see. But that's a great... Yeah, that's a great result. You know, anytime you win at home at this stage of European competition, it's a feel good factor for the players, squad, for the manager, for the fans. Believe again in David Moyes. Semi final of a, you know, it's
good
not
competition. And apparently good numbers again in the stadium and all that. You know, the West Ham fans will turn out. So it's a great competition. Yeah. And like you say, if they can address a bit of Premier League form before that, they can really enjoy those two games against Altmore in the semi final.
Okay.
Just one more game just to talk on. We'll go back to Premier League, mate. It was on Monday night. Danny and I were doing Leeds v Liverpool. You know, a huge game for Leeds in terms of where they're at. And David Ornstein had told us before the game, Rob, that the San Francisco 49ers, who are looking to invest in the club, but that's all reliant on them being in the Premier League. And if the Premier League goes, maybe they go, the investment goes, the stadium doesn't get done, Newmont. So there's a lot riding on Leeds having to come good and stay in the Premier League. And I have to say the performance, Rob, for a team who've just got beat 5-1 by Crystal Palace the week before to get beat 6-1, it could have been 10, to be honest, in the second half. There's alarm bells ringing at Elland Road, my friend. Alarm bells, because I think I said on the day to Anna and Daniels there, there ain't much to hang your hat on right now with Leeds. You know, some teams you think defensively not bad, and Gary O'Neill's got organisation, and we might nick a goal through Brennan Johnson at Forest or whatever. And I look at Leeds, Rob. There ain't too many bits that are really working that well.
Well, it's funny because, again, this is a long, turned into a long podcast, Rob, and there's quite a lot to there's quite a lot I could talk about in this game. And we got, I think I have Leeds this weekend. Yeah, Leeds are at Fulham, first game on Saturday morning. I'm just preparing for that now. They've scored goals, Rob.
Yeah, they have got goals. Apart they've from Leicester, they're the second most goals down there in
the bottom half. They've scored more goals than Chelsea.
Yeah.
That's 10 more. They've got 10 more goals than Chelsea. Defensively, they've been a disaster. And they've been a disaster for a long period of time. And the Bielsa thing was conceding too many goals. Mm. Jesse March helped a little bit, conceding too many goals. Gracia's come in. And we know that there's from the young players there. And there's the signings in the attacking areas. I kind of like them. But they're young. And the concern was, and I watched a press conference of Gracia, was asked, well, your team's just collapsed twice.
Yeah.
They conceded a goal and they collapsed. He didn't have any answers
to say,
for them.
Did he? No, because he looked shell shocked.
The
back four's not good enough.
I know. Well, you said that.
Not individual. But then you've got to organise them. You've got to create a unit, and you've got to just work to. You know, it just doesn't seem like it's there, mate. The goalkeeper at times is, you know, makes some good saves. I know he's a young goalkeeper, but right at this moment, he's having it's a difficult period for him.
Yeah,
with what's going on. They're in serious trouble, mate.
They're one of two teams, Southampton being the other, Rob, that have absolutely gone all in on youth. Yeah. Absolutely gone all in with their transfer policy in summer and in January in youth, and bringing young players into the club with the thought that let's get the future stars early. We'll build them into a team.
Yeah.
And I get it, but you know, Southampton and Leeds United right now. You know, on the other side of that would be Fulham. Fulham brought in some experience, and Andres Pereira and Willian and a couple of others. Again, I think I have Fulham this weekend. Well, Fulham, they're playing Fulham, aren't they? You know, there's a few other players they brought in, Rob, Premier League experience.
Yeah, Pereira, didn't they? Chris Wood in. And...
Yeah, Bert Leno, the goalkeeper's got experience. Yeah. You know, Willian. Yeah. So Paulinho is an experienced midfield player. So they just didn't go with it. They didn't go with the same philosophy. Anyway, the Leeds have got problems. But just quickly on Liverpool, Rob, before we wrap up.
Mm.
And I know it's Leeds United, and I know they're not very good defensively, but Liverpool were different.
Yeah.
Liverpool were different. And Trent. How about if, I mean, Trent is, I mean, how about finally Jurgen Klopp making a big tactical switch? If you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah.
The Man City style with the fullback going into the middle of the park is tailor-made for Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Oh, absolutely.
He looked absolutely world-class with his passing. His passing is, there aren't many better around.
He's a creative force that they don't have in midfield.
Right. And then you're forcing Konate to go up there and defend more. Yeah, that works better than Trent. He will get in there when he has to under sustained pressure or drop back into a four. But I just liked it. Mm. Jurgen Klopp thought it was the best performance. Again, they were so controlled with Trent pulling the strings, making assisting passes for goals, and the front players getting goals. I mean, they were very, very, very good Liverpool. And you know, my one of my best buddies is a Liverpool fan, and he's like, "Come on, we can get back in the top four." I said, "I don't think you can. No, I think you've left it a little bit too late." But that was better.
I think a bit like we've talked at Chelsea. I think with Liverpool and whether European football have some. Calibre is what they want. I almost think they'd be better off out of it for 1 year and concentrate on getting themselves back in shape. But from now to the end of the season, Robin, we talked about it, this is a chance to work some of those things out, to start getting yourself ready. So once we hit August next season, they're flying and ready to go with the shape and with
a different shape. Helps them in midfield, helps them defensively, helps them in many. I just a little surprised they didn't try it earlier, and it is Leeds United. But it's something for everybody to watch in terms of Liverpool. Are they going to do this, you know, 4-3 and all that kind of stuff? Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, interesting stuff from Liverpool. What's your mate? Another great week of European football. They had a bit of a mixed bag this midweek. If you think Man City win, so they face the mighty Madrid. Chelsea lose and continue to crumble. Manchester United got a mauling in Seville while the Hammers hammered Gent to go through. Look out for our next podcast. That's going to be on Sunday. That's April the 23rd when we'll review match week 32 of the Premier League and look back at both semi-finals in the FA Cup where Manchester City take on Sheffield United. Manchester United have a tough game now against Brighton, having lost and dumped out of the Europa League. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.